Hello and welcome to the Games with Garfield podcast. My name is Tyler Bielman. I am alongside the irreverent Scaff Elias.
Hello.
And the indomitable Richard Garfield.
Here again.
And we do have a guest in the studio audience. Richard, would you like to introduce the guest?
Yep. David Lee, my entourage. You want to say hi?
Hello.
David will be providing various sound effects and hopefully laughter if we do our job right. That's your cue, David. Perfect. Okay. So before we get things going in earnest today, I wanted to ask you guys, have you any funny stories out of the previous podcast? We're about 8 or 9 shows in, and, you know, my friends will tell me that they love it and that we're doing a fantastic job. You guys, any funny stories coming out of your podcast?
Yeah, I was going through the podcast the other day, and the Scrabble one was fresh in my mind, and our story about playing the word doing, and my son came up to me and asked me whether I knew that gullible wasn't in the dictionary, and I
had no idea.
Yeah, you should look it up. It
is
there
right after the show.
And after we had that interaction, I told him that doing was in the dictionary, and he said, "No, it isn't." And my daughter said, "No, it isn't." I said, "Yeah, it's a word, doing." And they said, "Well, what does it mean?" I said, "It's the sound that something makes when you drop it on the table, maybe." And then doing. And they didn't believe me. So Terry ran up and checked her computer, she found that doing was there, and she goes, "Oh, it's doing, Daddy." And then, but Skylar did it on his own computer, and he could not get doing out of his mind. He would read it, and every time he read it, he was reading it as doing. And I asked him, "What does that mean?" And he said, "Well, I don't know." And I said, "Does it look like a sound?" And he goes, "No, it doesn't look like a sound." And I said, "Well, why don't you read their sample sentence?" And they said, "Well, the party was a big doing." That doesn't make any sense. So eventually I had to point out to him that it's pronounced doing, and then he fell off the sofa laughing.
Nice. Very good. And this brings us, it's perfect that you told a story about doing, which is very similar in sound to the topic of this week's podcast. What's that going to be?
That's going to be the ding.
The ding.
Ding.
That's right. We're going to talk a little bit about the leveling game mechanic. I've also heard it talked about as growth in power over time, but for the purposes of our podcast, we'll probably just call it the ding or leveling. As far as I know, certainly the most popular application of it, or what people think of the root of leveling, is Dungeons and Dragons. Are you guys aware of any previous incarnations of leveling mechanically before D&D?
As with many things in D&D, I think the roots probably there lie at least a little bit in war games that preceded it. Certainly there's war games where you leveled up from green to normal to veteran status.
Would you do that in the middle of a game?
Sometimes in the middle of a game, sometimes in a campaign. Yeah, but both.
And they
predate D&D by a number of years, yeah.
And Chainmail was spawned D&D, and Chainmail was a miniatures game which actually had leveling in it and sort of a campaign structure like D&D.
Yeah, I have an original copy of Chainmail kicking around somewhere that I picked up along the way, and I haven't opened it. It's still shrink wrapped, but I haven't. Have you read the Chainmail rules?
I have. It was in my original box set of D&D, and I had to get it because they told me it was vital to playing D&D. But I read it, but never played it.
Yeah, not to be confused with Chainmail miniatures that Wizards did years and years and years later. I think while we were still there. Do you remember that, Scaff? Were you involved in that, being an old-school miniatures guy?
Kind of. I mean, certainly in some of the rules, it was not the game necessarily that we wanted to do. We wanted to do, plastic pre-painted miniatures and not the metal miniatures that ended up being Chainmail. But it was a first step toward coming up with a plastic pre-painted skirmish game there at Wizards, which they eventually came out with.
All right, so let's just talk a little bit about leveling in Dungeons & Dragons to begin with. So I believe in sort of first edition basic D&D, you had the basic classes, and you would go up in level in your class. And as I recall, you would certainly bump ability scores. Is that right?
No,
I think I don't. Was I don't it just? I don't remember
you,
that.
The first D&D, all your leveling was mostly used for what you cross referenced on your to hit chart.
And your hit points.
And your hit points. Oh, that was another
yeah,
point
that's right. Yes, your hit points. Yeah, that's right.
And saving. Were there throws.
And saving?
But
throws.
your savings throw chart. Yeah.
Oh, and one more thing, very importantly, your spells.
Right.
For one class, there was also something else going on. Yeah.
Those damn wizards have always looked differently.
Count elves or whatever. But.
Not in the original.
No.
I think in the original there was only two spell casting, so, but there were only in the original there were only three classes. Right, there wasn't even thieves.
Is that true? The original red box.
Yeah, I think the version I have. I don't know.
Anyway, for many of the classes, it was also their spells.
Right, and
For many, it wasn't.
Right, and then second edition came along, and
Then first edition came along.
Sorry, right. Well, there was D&D, Advanced D&D, Expert D&D, and then first edition. What do you count as first edition?
Usually, when people say first edition, they don't mean the first edition of Dungeons and Dragons. They mean
the first
AD&D.
Do they mean the first hardback
first edition
books?
AD&D.
Right.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm referring to something before that.
Well, you're old school, Garfield.
And that's what
we love about you. Because
remember, mine came with chainmail.
That's right. I was going to say, I didn't even know it came in the box.
Probably they had some extra copies of chainmail.
They might have. So then we get to the hardback books, and then I think the leveling became more robust for each class, right?
Right.
Right. And so leveling is tied to experience points. But I think there were other systems that sort of came out in that era that used XP differently, right, or leveled differently.
Sure. In those days, there was a conflict between two major systems. One was called the leveling system, which was what D&D did, and then there was a bunch of systems that came out, which were called skill-based systems, where by practicing a skill, it gets better. And so RuneQuest was one of the games that did a skill-based system, and later examples of that are things like Call of Cthulhu.
Was GURPS a system that where you spent XP to gain skills? I don't remember the GURPS system.
I never played GURPS. I just looked at it, and I forget now. I do know that while the conflict between level and skill, I mean, there really is a difference. There's also a continuum between them. You can make your skills more and more level-like by making them chunkier and chunkier, you can have it so that as you go up levels, you get points to spend on skills and things like that. The intervening years has made the distinction a little muddier between leveling and skill-based systems.
Yeah, the essence of the argument back in the old days shouldn't have been level versus skill. It should have been how chunky do you want your power versus time moments to come.
Right. And I think one of the things that we talked about is those moments can come in a variety of different places, different ways. Like, for example, getting items.
Right. In early D&D, your leveling moments were so few and far between, and especially if you were like a fighter, really nothing much was happening when you were leveling. And the interesting things that would happen to you along the way is once or twice per level, you would get a new item, and then you would either get a new capability from that or a new effective stat increase or whatever.
Right.
So those were definitely things in one way to think of that is, when you were buying items, you would accumulate both experience points and gold, and every certain amount of gold levels you would hit in gold, that would allow you to buy a new set of armor. So it was very similar to a couple of different level points during your level.
Right, and then there's, even in the D&D system, right, there's spending experience points to create items or to make scrolls. The clerics can do that, and
in the third edition.
Yeah, I guess I'm moving forward a little bit in the D&D timeline, which I never quite understood because it never seemed like you wanted the party to be at disparate levels.
I think the main reason for it is that you wanted to give characters, place the item creation into the hands of characters, And it's very difficult to come up with a cost for that that makes sense across all of the various campaigns that you might have. Well, the one really solid cost that there is in D&D is experience points. The whole system really is based on it, and so it makes it very, very concrete exactly what you know you have to pay in order to create your own items. It's actually really similar to the undead, who in D&D, the biggest penalty that you can pay in D&D is being hit and having your levels drained.
Yeah, the level drain is ridiculous, right? First of all, you got to restat your guy right there at the table, which is no fun.
Well, they did away with that. They have these ways of getting these temporary levels. So you just take a bunch of minuses and you don't have to de-level anymore. But a lot of people complained about that, and I think it was sort of one of the brilliant decisions of original D&D was to have the undead drain levels, because you know you fight all sorts of things and you're not really scared of anything because you know it's just paper and pencil, right? Oh, wrong. Because when the undead come around and take away experience points from you, that's horrific.
That's time.
Yes, that's right. It makes you sad. They have taken the only real thing away from you that they can, which is the time you've put into the game.
But I was sort of alluding to the disparity in levels in a party. I've certainly in my evolution as I've played with different dungeon masters, I can't remember the last time I played in a game where XP was given per session or even per character per session.
Well, when people in your campaign died, did you come back a level lower or anything, or just
no? You just rolled up a new character, and we would just level periodically when the DM says, "Oh, by the way, between sessions, you guys leveled." Is that your guys' experience too? I mean, is anybody sitting there giving out XP per combat anymore? I mean, nobody is doing that.
Well, actually, in the campaigns I'm playing in right now, one, yeah, gives them out per combat.
And if you miss a session, do you miss that XP?
We've never had a character miss a session. We've had players miss sessions, but someone else plays their character.
Interesting.
And then and there's never been any cause to not give it out as a party. And then the other campaign I'm in does, you know, it just says, now you level, now you level, now you level. Although that was a recent switch. That used to be experience given out, and which was important because the penalty for dying was, you know, you came back a level lower.
So what was at its most, what was the difference between the guy with the highest level and the guy with the lowest level?
I don't think anyone was ever two whole levels apart. So it was always some flavor of, are you always one level behind, or are you one level behind 10% of the time or 90% of the time? You know, that was basically the...
Yeah, that's certainly a big change over the years. At the beginning, when we played, it was all individual XP for individual actions, and had crazy things like the person who did the last blow to the monster would get the points and things like that.
It was interesting. Lead to some interesting choices.
Just some retarded systems at the beginning. And as time has gone along, I've certainly all my games have been very, very quick and loose with the XP, and it's mostly the party leveling. Except for the more level based systems, which are the more skill based systems, which are still around, and those sometimes have it so that the skills you're actually using are the ones that go up.
Right. I've never played in a skill based system where there was group skilling.
I've played in some. Yeah. But most of them are things like there are things like. When you make a skill check, if you critical it, you get a chance of going up a percent point or something like that.
Yeah.
One of the reasons the skill systems were being looked at the beginning was because people thought they were more realistic, and in some ways they are, but then game wise they're often less satisfying than getting this big ding. So.
Well, no, they can lead to weird behavior too, because you want to in the skill based systems you need to put the time in to make sure you get the check mark on your skill.
Right.
So okay, well we're going along and I haven't had an opportunity to fire my gun, so driving in the car on the way to wherever we're going, I'm shooting at road signs.
Yeah. So I mean, systems can get around that, but there are ways to game those systems, and you get similar sorts of things. In I mean, you don't get weird behavior in the level based systems, but you get weird effects. Like I've never climbed anything in the game, and yet I'm suddenly able to scale up the side of a cliff because I'm a fifth level now.
Yeah. And speaking of just sort of the group aspect of it, with third edition came prestige classes, right, which sort of gave you a tree to follow with your leveling. It sort of gave you a prescribed path to sort of these branches instead of just a straight leveling of barbarian. You could go into these different paths, different trees. And I think, you know, we have talked in the past, Richard, about you don't want, like, when people tell you how to play the game that you're playing, and, you know, when you're leveling, it's your individual control. It's outside of the game session usually, and you're choosing where you want to make those decisions on your leveling.
Weirdly enough, a lot of the games I've gotten in these days, the leveling decisions I've made have been almost completely made by other people because the systems are so complicated these days.
Yeah, that's the part of the problem is the more choices you give people, and especially a game like D&D, which has been around for whatever 30 years, 40 years, however long it's been around, to keep up the complexity and depth of choices for someone that's played the game for 25 years continuously, it is difficult to do that and have simple, clean leveling decisions.
Yeah,
I'm not saying impossible. I'm just saying difficult. Right. It's not the natural place.
Well, it's also, I mean, now
to
with
fall
the,
into
now with the internet and boards, right? There are min-max builds for every character, for every prestige path, right? And you don't have to make those decisions anymore. It just becomes sort of prescribed for you if you're going to follow that. But third edition was really all about being able to take anything and kind of mush it together. You could make any sort of class mix, any sort of race class mix that you wanted to, and the templates were there to take care of you and sort of allow you to explore those freedoms. And then you weren't min-maxing, but if you really wanted the half-orc rogue wizard, you could build it in third edition. And fourth edition has taken a step in the other direction. It's pulled that all back and taken a lot of the control back out of the player's hands. But anyway, so, you know, Richard, you had mentioned that the chunkiness of leveling.
Ding! I think you just went up a level.
I did, and so I just leveled into board games, actually. So let's talk about, I'm hard-pressed to think of very many board games that have really good leveling mechanics. Can you guys think of any?
Depends on what you mean by really good.
Sorry. Yeah, interesting, fun.
Well, there's some games that have... there's some games that walk very close to D&D, like Warhammer Quest or Hero Quest, where it's just a board game version, or Descent more recently. And so leveling there works a lot like D&D. But then there's other games like Titan or Talisman, which again have the fantasy patina, but the players do level.
Can you talk a little bit about Titan and Talisman, just for people that might not be familiar with those games?
Sure. With Titan, Titan's a fantastic game, but it takes a long time to play. In fact, the subline on it was the Monster Slugathon Fantasy War Game, which made me instantly fall in love with it. And in Titan, you go around the map and you collect creatures, and then you battle your stacks of creatures against the other person's creatures, and as you do, you gain experience, and your king, as in chess, your king is your titan. If you lose that, you're out of the game. But the experience you get is put towards leveling up your titan, and they get extra hit points, and they attack with extra dice across the game. At the beginning, there are a reasonably strong character, but they can be beaten up by a lot of the monsters in the game, and by the end of a long game, they can be quite powerful on their own.
And Talisman?
Talisman is a little less head-to-head than Titan. You run around a map and fight monsters and collect things like you might imagine doing in D&D, but everybody's independent, but when you do land on another person, you can attack them, and they're all the accumulated strength and cunning that you've gotten, and will be of advantage to knocking out your opponent.
if you want to go a little bit further afield than the fantasy role playing simulations or fantasy combat simulations, I mean technically in you know in Axis and Allies you get technology levels that that increase the powers of your units,
right.
And actually a lot of strategic you know military games same kind of thing. You hit these tech levels that level your units.
Yeah, and I guess I mean this might lead us into more of a conversation about what the more strict definition is, but certainly there's promotion in chess, right? The pawn reaches the other side, gets the queen. That's I don't know if we want to lump that in as leveling because it or a king is that what you said?
Or knight I said.
Okay, and because
or a bishop if you want to sass it a little.
But that's a sort of binary state, right? The pawn is either...
Or a rook, because sometimes a queen might cause a stalemate to occur. It's all kind of different pieces.
Thank you for that. And then I guess taking it down to my level, checkers, certainly, when you reach the other side, you get it. You certainly level up your checker.
Oh, have you gotten to the point where you've kinged someone in checkers?
I kinged me. I dinged on kings just yesterday, actually.
and
you know even in Monopoly, you know you certainly get to level your properties up there.
Absolutely. Houses, hotels, Monopolies, the whole thing.
Yeah.
So
say one of the big distinctions here is that these games tend not to have leveling carry from game to game, whereas with role-playing games, you tend to string together these sessions, which people think of as sort of in between one game. It's a campaign of games. But when you play Titan, once it's over, your Titan goes back to level one.
Right.
You're sort of talking about the metagame as we talk as you certainly your definition that I go by, right, which is where you play and who you play with and when you play and all those things. And the idea of this persistence of the game state outside of the game it's sessions themselves. Do you want to talk? I mean, is leveling relevant to that conversation about the metagame?
Well, there's a lot of things in the metagame which can feel like leveling. First of all, there's two things in leveling which offhand, there may be more that come to me, but that seem to make what leveling is to me, and that one is the chunkiness. It feels like if you're just getting experience and it's sort of just leading into this continuous increase in power, that's not leveling. That's something to do with leveling, but it's not leveling. And the other is carrying effect from session to session. So in that sense, there's no leveling in Titan, even though it kind of feels like leveling. When you're talking about the metagame, so if you're talking about a metagame system where you're going up chunky levels, like you're going from rank one to rank two to rank three, and getting to rank three is a really big thing, it also has to do with leveling if it has some sort of effect in the game. So do you get a reward for it? Like if you get invited to other tournaments or
so like ratings, ranking systems, that kind of thing. And
sure, if those are chunky and they feel like they give you an advantage in the game, which they typically don't, then that would feel like a rating, a leveling system to me.
How about when I go from white belt to what's the next one after white? You go white, then
I think it's yellow. Different in different things.
White, then yellow, and then up the belt. I don't think you're certainly getting a trophy, but you're not.
Most of the time, that isn't that feels like dinging in that you're getting a very chunky reward, but it doesn't have the, and it does carry from game to game, but it doesn't have that third thing which is that it gives you an advantage in the game. I mean, if a particular belt in a particular community got
like if you got
preferential
a
seating or something like that,
right?
Then maybe.
And are there any ratings ranking systems? Just name one that sort of gives you preferential seating in a tournament environment or something like that.
Well, I think a lot of them do, but it's not a really big. It's typically not really big.
And a lot of them that tend to affect the seeding tend to fail on Richard's chunkiness concern. Right. Like a lot of times you've got a smooth rating system and you might seat people on the basis of that, or like you're, you know, you're in time trials or something. In a
Magic Pro Tour, right, you gain Pro Tour points, which gets you buys. But, I mean, you're sort of just staying on the train. You're not...
There's nothing really chunky there as far as the seating is concerned. It's right. all pretty continuous. Now, one thing that will happen is sometimes you will get this other thing that Richard mentioned, which is access to certain tournaments when you hit certain cutoff levels.
Yeah, invites.
Right. Something that springs to mind for me...
But that's sort of borderline in that you... That's leveling... In the metagame.
Right, which doesn't necessarily
mean,
right.
mean, that, mean the in-game, the game process itself is affected.
Right, and so that's another way to yeah, if the leveling in the metagame may not carry any power within the game.
Right.
And so a lot of those do feel like leveling. I think the belt example does feel a lot like leveling in some ways, but it doesn't carry all the connotations from D&D that you would hope that it does.
Right. The other thing that comes to mind, and Scaff, you're probably the guy to talk to about this, is the idea of frequent flyer mile programs. And I know most of those have different levels that you achieve, right?
Yeah. Frequent flyer mile programs have these two big components. I think the major component for people is the non-chunky part, the non-leveling part. You fly more, you get more miles, you can spend the miles, and that's all relatively smooth.
Right, that's just an economic system.
Yeah. And then they do tend to have these various levels, and at these various level cutoffs, you get a lot of benefits, like free upgrades, or actually you get to accumulate miles at a faster rate. So it's generally a bad deal to spend extra money on these frequent flyer programs to hit those levels, unless you're really close. If you're really close to those levels.
People, I wish you could see his eyes light up when he says, wait, unless you're really close.
Then actually it can definitely be a benefit to take,
take a flight to Puerto Rico for no good reason at all.
Because then you hit that next level, and then you're earning, 50% extra miles across your travel next year. Generally, these things only happen, of course, if you are flying quite a bit.
Puerto Rico is actually overrun with people trying to boost up their frequent flyer miles.
Right. Well, certainly, I mean, a characteristic of, right, people are min-maxing the frequent flyer system constantly, and there's really arcane, complex rules, and I don't know what percentage of people would spend money they don't have to in order to ding at the frequent flyer level, but sounds like something you would do.
It is something I would do.
Okay.
If I'm close enough. I actually did some calculations, and it's...
Tell us about your calculations.
Well, I'm about to fly a million miles on United, and I no longer fly that much. I used to fly over 100,000 miles a year for years and years and years. And the thing is, it's kind of worth it for me to get over that hump, because then I achieve a status automatically without having to upkeep it. That generates extra miles for me. So
interesting. Well, I'm if you want to take a trip to Vegas, I'm in. Just put on some miles.
Not far enough.
Not far enough? Monte Carlo.
How many trips to Vegas?
Yeah, that's true.
So, we've been talking about these characteristics of what leveling, how we could be defining leveling, but there is definitely a feel to it, and leveling certainly is a powerful game mechanic. Why do you think it is persisted for these years? Why do you think we see it as we'll talk about video games, but this evolution, why is it so important? Why is it great? Why do you see it in so many games?
I think at the most basic level, it's that you are that you're being told that you did good for the thing that you're doing. Like, how do you know that it's good, that what you're doing over and over and over again is a good thing? Because your daddy tells you it's a good thing.
I hope we're still talking about games.
And I think that's sort of the main part of it. You put your time in, and it's a visible sign of, wow, look, some numbers went up. So therefore, I know I must be doing something good, right?
Yeah, I think in a game sense, one of the reasons why it's more fun than the skill-based systems often is because it's more fun to get a big change than a little change. where you're constantly adjusting a little bit, having it so that your whole play experience goes to the next level or changes in some fundamental way is exciting.
Yeah, I mean,
and parents know this. I mean, how often do you encourage your child? Every 30 minutes, do you say, you know what, you're doing a really good job? No, that's going to wear down pretty quick. Do you do it once a week, pull them aside and say, you know what, you're doing a really good job? Well, that's probably better.
Well, all so right.
Pick the right amount of chunkiness to maximally convince the people that they are actually doing a good job, even though
they're even probably, though there's no cost.
Even
to
though
you
they're really
actually...
they're really probably average.
Richard, do you as the other parent in the room, do you agree that the reinforcement schedule for your kids needs to be sufficiently chunked?
Yeah, I do. That seems like a good idea.
Fair enough. So, you know, when we're talking about these two ideas of why leveling works.
Yeah. One other thing about the leveling is something that you mentioned earlier was off the podcast was that leveling in some ways doesn't make games sense in that you're fighting you go up a level and then you fight harder things, and so it ends up being a wash.
Yeah, I was just, I mean, we'll sort of talk a little bit about digital games, but currently I'm obsessed with this game Borderlands, which has this really nice leveling system in it.
Are you doing a good job in it?
I don't know.
Well, what level are you now?
Oh, it depends which character we're talking about. I have an 18th level hunter. I know. And I was just, you know, the reality is, right, you hit the rat with your axe 3 times on average to kill it at level 1, and then at level 9...
It's a tough rat.
You know, 3 times, you're level 1. But then at level 9, you're killing the default monster, the whatever it is, the giant rat. The giant rat, and you're also hitting it 3 times to kill it. The numbers go up, but the relative numbers don't go up, right? And the amount of time you spend doesn't go up. It's exactly the same play pattern as what you were doing at level 1, except if you happen to run across to level 1, right, you can whack it very quickly, which I think makes you feel good. Right? I think it gives you a sense of power and accomplishment.
Or it gives me a sense of wasting my time as I run into these encounters I don't want to deal with in all the old RPGs. Grandmother with teeth attacks you.
I'd like to say that if you are an 18th level hunter, and that's only one of many characters that you have, your fundamental concern probably isn't with wasting time.
No, time is the one thing I got loads of, believe you me. So, but I mean, this is a, you know, I think that people talk about grinding, right? You grind in World of Warcraft or other MMOs, and you're just sort of, there's certainly a gold accumulation connotation to grinding, but there's also just grinding on monsters to sort of to get your XP up. You know, World of Warcraft being the dominant online game in the world, I don't think that's unfair to say.
It's unfair to poker.
Yes, you're right. I would not want to be unfair to poker. Although poker has been unfair to me. certainly, one of the things that you see, right, is when an expansion comes out, one of the main things they do is they raise the level cap from 60 to 70 to 80, and people want to buy in because they want to get those new levels. And all that's doing is taking the 70th level characters that used to be the top of the food chain and saying, "Up, you're not anymore," but the people still buy the expansions because they move up to 80, and it gives them a more leveling play pattern to deal with.
There's a couple things about that. One is that oftentimes games use that to introduce complexity, and so certainly with D&D this was true, and it's very true with games like Diablo, where you get more and more skills as you go along, and so your game and World of Warcraft, your game experience playing at the top levels very much more complicated than it is playing at the low levels.
True.
And the other thing is oftentimes for the difficulty of associated with playing the game, as far as the difficulty of fighting a particular set of beasts, Jonathan Tweet actually talked to me about an idea he had for construct. He thought that the best way to construct the power curve in a role-playing game was to make it so that it went sign you sinusoidally up. So that way, that is, it would get much more difficult when you sort of move to the next batch of monsters, and you'd be working really hard, and they'd slowly become easier and easier as you went up levels, and then you get another batch of monsters that are much tougher. Because he said that's what he felt like that was the really important thing, not that it stays the same as you go up, but that you get this increase in challenge. You got different monsters; they're much much harder, and then they get progressively easier and easier and easier, and then you get this new batch.
Right, which is sort of counter to how I think people think about games. You start with the easy enemies and it gets harder. So, that, I mean, I think it's a really interesting...
Well, no, I think Richard's saying relative.
Yeah, no, I understand relative, but I'm saying that, like, it's not the most intuitive way to design a game. I think it's an interesting observation. Other examples?
Leveling, Mafia Wars. That's one of the big ones.
I made it to 96th level, and I was just trying to get to 100th level, and I finally just gave up.
You gave up at 96th level?
I did. And our friend Jonathan...
So you never got the secret prize then?
What? Hold on. Let me get my phone. Jonathan made it to 100 and sent me a text message and said, I made it. I don't have to play anymore. Thank God. And I ran out of patience at 96.
Wow, so close.
I think I made it to level 3.
Well, 3's good. In a relative sense,
I feel like I'm derelict. Usually, these games, I try very hard to figure out what makes them tick and what makes them addictive, and on more than just an intellectual level, I like to really experience it. And, Mafia Wars has not happened to me.
Yeah, well, for me, it was the convenience of having it on the iPhone, and really, that's Mafia Wars.
Oh, so it was an extremely convenient way for you to waste time.
Exactly. It actually wasted. Like 30 seconds every few hours that I might have an idle moment before a meeting, or
right.
If I was, you know, in the restroom or whatever. I mean, and it was just, it's such an uninteresting game, but it's you're upkeeping. You're not even playing. You're just upkeeping it.
You're getting patted on the head, though, and that's what makes it all worthwhile.
Right, and the reinforcement schedule is
because you have lots of really good things, right? You have virtual yachts and planes, I'm assuming.
No, I mean the properties that you get. You'd be surprised at how shallow the curve actually, the amount of items you get actually are. But it's...
There's no degree of shallowness that would surprise me about Mafia Wars.
Fair. But I just found that, right, I would get up in the morning, first thing I'd do is roll over and upkeep my Mafia Wars on my iPhone, and it'd be the last thing I do before I go to bed, because there's 8 hours there where you know, stuff's ticking away and I'm accumulating wealth that I can then spend in the morning.
So speaking of which, I've got a business idea I want to spring on you. And for all our readers out there, I might, or listeners, I might be readers, listeners, whatever. I might be your first because this is closed captioned, right? I might be your first customer if you can come up with a Facebook app where it defriends people that invite me to other apps. That's all I want. Just automatically defriends them.
Yeah, I'd sign up for that one too.
Wow. Okay. That.
I don't.
You got zero tolerance for your news feeds. Is that the deal?
No.
I have no news feeds.
It's a matter of being invited to blood wars and mafia wars
and vampire wars
and vampire wars
and farm wars.
Yeah, all these games where you're constantly being barraged by people saying, "Join me! I really need your help."
Yeah, but no. But I mean, certainly you understand the incentive system there, right? They're going to get a goodie if you sign up.
I understand that. So
you hate them for that?
Well,
it's just annoying.
I'll still be friends with them in real life. I don't have to be virtual friends.
That's exactly right.
How about a Facebook?
I don't have to go to Tupperware parties in real life. They're trying to sell me Tupperware.
You don't have to, but why would you not? here's what we need. We need Facebook levels. We need to introduce leveling into Facebook itself so that I'm a level 7 Facebook guy and you're a level 2 Facebook guy. Because then
you could kick my Facebook ass.
That's right. And I think they're missing out on an opportunity. I'm going to make a phone call after we get off the phone.
Yeah.
Make a phone call after we're done with the show, I should say.
You know there's a perfume called Facebook?
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for the punchline, Garfield.
That's
it. Did you know Doing's in the dictionary?
Wait, hold on. What?
Bing! You just went up a level.
I did, and so did all of you. That's going to mark the end of our show. We all ding together. And
when you get to this third level, I heard you get the capability of telling dirty jokes.
I've been third level for a long, long time. And as always, I am Tyler Billman on behalf of Scaff Elias.
Ding!
And Richard Garfield.
Ding.
And Silent But Deadly, David Lee.
Ding.
We will talk to you next time. Yee-haw.